Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. I'm your host, Francis Zier, and we are joined today by Rachel Carton. She's a social media consultant and the creator of Every Other Person Who Works in Social's favorite newsletter, Link in Bio, which she's been writing for about 4 years. She's won a Webby for her work. She's also judged the Webbies. You often say that you are not really an expert on social media, but I think in as much as anybody can be, I feel like you are.
I'll take it.
Yeah. So I first heard about you, and as I think a lot of people did, back when you worked for Bon Appetit. I remember in like 2020 being on social media and like, you know, it's like tagged like at Milk Carton and all these posts. I'm like, which YouTube character is this? I don't recognize this person from YouTube. But, you know, didn't forget the name. And then like a couple of years later, I heard of your newsletter. But to give like the full, very quick background, like you started in social, you worked at this company Plated out of college, right? Which was like a meal kit delivery, and then Bon App. And you did both of those for like 4 years, which is each, which I feel like is so rare in this industry to work somewhere for, like that for so long. But what I'm really curious about is like how you started contributing to the internet. I think I heard on an interview that you had a food blog in college. Is that correct?
Yes, I had a food blog. I also was just like the friend who would write all of their other friends on like Facebook captions, like in high school. I even wrote a college essay about how I write Facebook captions, and I got into that college, but I didn't go. But I just was like always online, always the person who, I don't know, it was like I had the food blog in college. It was like a food and fashion blog.
Did you, I know you like lived for New York in a while. You didn't go to college in New York, did you?
No, I went to the Claremont Colleges.
Okay, in California.
In California, yeah. And I studied organizational studies, which is like the liberal arts version of like a business major, I guess. And so when I worked at Plated, I actually started off doing like HR for them.
And community, right?
Like HR, community, customer experience and social, like all in one, like, you know, one of the first employees, too many things. Horrible experience doing HR. Like if you have anxiety, like do not work in HR. I was like, I would wake up and then be like, did I like file that form? It was really, really terrible. So I eventually made the case to work in social full time for them. And that was my first real job in social media.
Before we get too deep into all these things, I like, obviously while I was researching you, I was thinking a lot about, you know, food social media, food Instagram, and like the type of food content I get. I used to work in restaurants, and I like, you know, big food person me. So nowadays, like, you do still, like, I think you consult for Kava, you still work with various food brands, not like strictly though anymore. Do you think, or like how do you think the state of like food social media, food Instagram, food TikTok has changed in, let's say, like the past 5 years? Like, is it different?
I think like it's just gone from, you know, legacy media being, you know, where you go for food content to creators. Like when I think like a good like barometer for me is like when I, you know, sit down on Sunday to plan what I'm going to make for the week, which is like something I love to do. I'm going to like Instagram accounts of people that I follow to like make recipes, and I'm not going to the usual like, you know, media sites that
Pierce Abernathy's, etc.
Like I'm making like Cabbages World, if you follow them, they're so good. I just made an amazing like cold somen noodles from them, and it's just like I'll like save them, and that's how I'm finding recipes. So I think like that's a huge sort of switch that we've seen.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I still like, I save those recipes, but like I do the same thing on like, you know, Sunday, like make my grocery list. What am I going to cook this week? But I just kind of save the recipes as like, I more just consume it as like aspirational lifestyle. Like I feel like both those two, I literally wrote those two specifically down, Pierce Abernathy and Cabbages World, because they both have this like beautiful aspirational Brooklyn brownstone life. I mean, I live in Ridgewood, but it's like, I don't know, my apartment's not as nice as theirs, but anyways, how do you define the word creator? I'll give you my definition too, but I think it's a slippery word. How do you define the word creator?
I mean, a creator in the, you know, internet sense is like somebody who makes something for the internet, whether for their own accounts or it could be for other accounts. Mm-hmm. They aren't making things to, oh my God. No, see, I can't do it.
No. I'll stop you there. I know, I think. I think you did it. I think you defined it. Like, cause I think about this a lot. I think it's like, okay, like you can, it's exactly what happens where you start saying that and then you're like, okay, and you start to add like hedges and qualifiers. But I think like the most umbrella version of it is like somebody who is creating content for distribution online to an audience outside their immediate friends and family that they actually know. Like sure. To me, like that's right.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. I feel like I then, because then whenever I use the word creator, I'm sort of like using it up against influencer and what's the difference between an influencer and a creator. And so then I get all like messed up.
What is it?
Yeah. To me, a creator, well, it's, yeah, it's like very biased of mm-hmm. like an influencer is somebody who's, you know, selling their lifestyle on the internet, whereas a creator is somebody who's like selling their craft on the internet.
Yeah. I think, well, the reason I
you can
talk
be
about
both
this,
though.
Yeah. I think it like the line has only blurred more where like to be yeah. a good influencer, you have to have the craft and you have to be selling yeah. both. And like to be, if you want to be a creator, it's like the reality of putting enough time in that the craft is good is like, you have to be making money from it somehow or, you know, or just for the love of the game and you're like a software engineer. But yeah, I think like it's kind of collapsing in on itself.
I know. I agree. And who's mm-hmm. to say somebody who makes, you know, amazing vlogs of their day in the life isn't a creator in their own way, too. So it's, like, yeah. unfair to, like...
Well, they
are. Like, yeah, they are. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. In as much as, like, you in your, like, work life as a social consultant work with influencers and or creators, I guess for any listeners who are maybe on the creator side and like wanting to work with brands, what would you say, like advice or guidelines for working with brands for creator influencer types?
I think something I look for is just like, I don't know, somebody who's creating unique, interesting content. And like, I look a lot at like, if I'm thinking about working with somebody, what do their sponsored posts look like and mm-hmm. how much effort and sort of excitement are they going into their sponsored posts with? Because I think influencers' organic posts can look a lot different than their sponsored posts. And I want to see that they're like putting, you know, good effort into them.
Putting real juice in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever worked with creators like as like them being your client? Like, do you ever work with individuals or just brands at this point?
Just brands. I've had people reach out. I don't think I would know what to do.
Yeah. Well,
as much.
That's interesting. Cause like another of my like, you know, creator meta thoughts is that it's such a, this is true of really any industry, like film, you know, writing, whatever, where there's like, you're good at the creative side or you're good at the business side. And like, you know, maybe the Venn diagram, you're in the middle and that's great. But I think most people really aren't. I feel like I don't see this happening so much, and most people aren't like big enough to justify this, but like I keep saying that more people who are good at the creative side should be like looking for people who are good at like the business and the marketing side. So like, I don't know. It makes sense to me that you say that you haven't and that you're not sure how you would, but I feel like that is a market that could arise or that like maybe should arise.
I definitely have friends who are influencers who have social like videographers that work with them. I think like I find like, especially if they're filming recipes, like they need somebody who edits yeah. social first. And so I see it more like tactically than like strategically of like mm-hmm. pulling in social people.
Yeah. You know what you're doing. You just need somebody to like take over a part of it for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So part of why I'm talking to you is that we are promoting the Webby application for this season's Webby Awards, and you are a past Webby winner alongside Emily Schultz for both of your work on Bon Appetit Socials back in 2020. And then you also judged this last year's. So I read on your Twitter that you helped judge over 60 categories. What kind of questions were you like dealing with when you're like, first off, I trust that like the categories were mostly social or like first, yeah. what were the categories? And then what kind of questions are you like grappling with to decide if somebody should win an award?
Yeah. So I was judging social categories, and the way they break it down, it's like can be like social food, social, I don't know if these are exactly correct, but like video games, like every industry is like basically represented. And so that's how you get to like 60 applications, but or categories. But it is a really time consuming process. But I, you know, having been on the other side of somebody who's like submitted to the Webbies, I'm like, I want somebody like me to be judging these. I want, you never know who the judges are, I feel like, with a lot of these things. And you're like, are they people who even get social? Do they understand like why this might be innovative or unique? And so that's sort of the way that I was looking at it. I was looking a little bit at like performance of it, and then also just like what kind of swing did they take? Is it so interesting that they did this? But it's a lot of like kind of poking and digging around, because I think intentionally they don't have the applicants like write anything. So you're just sort of really judging the work for what it is. And so
that's smart.
A lot of sleuthing, a lot of sort of clicking around and understanding like how the audience received it. But
yeah. What was like of those 60 categories, was there any particular creators who like you remember now where you were like, that one was so good, they were so deserving of that win?
Like, as if I remember anything.
60, I mean, I guess you are. Kind
of as a, if I remember anything. Sieve. Like, yeah. I remember there was, I think, Macy, who works at Morning Brew, one of her videos that are like so good. And I was like so excited to see that in there, because I think it's so, the storytelling that they do with that series is amazing. So that's one that I remember. And I was like, so good.
Yeah, no, that they are really good. Okay, it's interesting what you're saying about like the sleuthing around and like figuring out whether you think they deserve to win. Because I wanted to ask like what you think, like not even just necessarily the Webbies, but like what you think makes a really good creator. Because like I'll just give this context, like with Creator Spotlight, right? Like I try to look for a lot of different people where it's like maybe something about the way, something about the content is really good and the way they're approaching it, but maybe it's a very small audience, but it's like, I like that they're putting so much work into something, even for a small audience, or it's like they're good at the marketing side and it's that, whatever. I think there's so many different things. So for you though, like what do you think makes a really good creator that is makes them deserving of recognition?
I mean, to me, I love like something that feels at home on the internet, but like nothing I've ever seen on the internet. Like, I think a good example that I like never stop talking about is like Planet Money's TikTok, like Jack Corby and like what he's done with that, like where it feels so familiar, but like nothing I've seen, and it performs and it does well. And like, that's such a rare thing to get, because there's so many social posts that, you know, you take that risk of trying something new and nobody sees it because the algorithm hates it and it feels too unfamiliar on the platform. And so to be able to like have all those like diagrams overlap with like what Planet Money has done is very impressive to me.
Yeah. Okay. This, I'm going to read a quote that you wrote in one of your newsletter issues back in spring 2021. It was like the first few months of your newsletter.
Okay.
You're talking about Gary Vee here, and you say, When I originally came up with LinkedIn Bio, I jokingly referred to it as the anti-Gary Vaynerchuk social media resource. I wanted it to highlight lots of different social media managers and never just be me doling out personal advice week after week. Doing social for a nonprofit is very different from doing social at a huge agency, and doing social at a beauty startup is very different from doing social at a legacy magazine. I recognize that I don't know everything there is to know about social media, and unlike Vaynerchuk, I don't pretend I do. Does that still describe what you're doing?
Definitely. I mean, the interviews are still, they're actually every week now. And I love talking to social managers who work in different fields. And I think that that's like the best part about LinkedIn Bio.
Yeah. So, okay. So LinkedIn Bio, it's your newsletter. Obviously we haven't really described it. It's basically two issues a week. One is an interview and the other is kind of like mix of essay roundup of social trends, like, you know, more your commentary, right?
Yes. Correct.
Mm-hmm. And you've been doing it for 3.5 years, 4 years,
something like that.
Yeah. You started doing it, I understand, like you left Bon App and then you started doing the newsletter and consulting at the same time. And like, they've kind of fed each other. Tell me more about that, like, symbiotic relationship.
Yeah. I mean, I think I started the newsletter not as like a like lead generation, yeah. you know, like thought leadership thing. I was sort of like, I need this resource to exist. I want to make it and like, let's see what happens. And I sort of like published when I could, and it wasn't like I was like super strict about it. Mm-hmm. And then to like make money during that time, I also consulted, which was like, you know, pretty necessary to do. And so, but then of course, over time, now people, you know, reach out all the time. I love your newsletter. Do you consult? And so it has worked out to be a very good sort of way for brands to discover me and my consulting, but it was never like created for that.
Yeah. Okay. You've now got like over 65,000 subscribers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is your relationship with that audience? Because like when I look at the, it's on Substack, when I look at the, like at the comment section, sometimes the comments are totally dead. Other times it's like 50 plus. And then there's also like, I'm sure email replies, you've got the Discord, whatever. I'm saying too much. Tell me about your relationship with your newsletter audience.
Yeah. I mean, I think like the Discord is where a lot of the conversations about the newsletter happen. And so I just found that to be the best place for people to talk to each other. I thought that was going to be really important. I think like a lot of the built-in tools at Substack are a little bit more like one way. And it's like you can like blast out, or like it's like a chat like thread, but I wanted a more sort of like living, breathing, like always on chat.
Other people create like threads within your ecosystem, within the LinkedIn.
Exactly. And it's like there's tons of, there's, you know, a chat room or whatever you want to call it for like every industry. So people who were also work in beauty can like ask each other questions. And exactly to like what I said, whatever, 3 years ago, like every industry has their own government, social, freelance, like every industry is represented. And then there's also just like generic like gut check, like hey, I'm thinking about doing this post, is it a bad idea? Like it's, so that's like the living, breathing version of LinkedIn bio. And I think that's why, like, you know, sometimes the comments aren't, you know, like going back and forth, because it's usually happening, I would say, in the Discord.
I know, I mean, so I, like I said earlier, you, one of your many hats plated was community manager. I also like read one or two back issues of LinkedIn bio where you're like, you know, kind of railing against the like brands trying to fake a community by making it, by making a Discord, making a Slack, whatever. I don't know. I guess how do you, what is community, like community as a word that actually has meaning and not just like something brand marketers say? What is community?
I mean, I think like brands making a community is a tough sell. I'm still not even sure if I understand completely what that looks like, because there's always sort of like capitalistic, you know, things in
which
mind.
Which is like anti-community.
Right. I'd say for like a newsletter, though, I do think like community can be real. I think like the Discord, because people talk to each other and, you know, then go off and DM each other and do meetups in their own places, feels like community, because I'm not like, I'm in it and I'm responding in it, but it's not like I'm like sanctioning who can talk I'm not making rules. I think there is a difference between brand communities and like newsletter communities that like, where like, you know, one community's, you know, aligning around loving a product, whereas one community's aligning around like, we all work in the same industry. I work alone and I've been like dying to talk to somebody else. Who that also does what I do.
Well, I feel like with like brands, like the brand wants to like, they want you to love the product, but they also like, they're like, oh, we want to own, like we want to own the social media manager, like Sprout Social. And maybe they have a community, I don't know, and I know they're a sponsor of yours, but I'm sure they would love to have like this community be like, to have created this community. But it's like a brand can't really do that. They can sponsor your newsletter, but they can't really do that. One thing I often ask people, and I will say people usually don't have an answer, is like how you think about your responsibility to your audience.
I mean, I think about that a lot. The reason that I also created LinkedIn bio is just like, I felt like social managers were always sort of like looked down upon. I mean, I try not talk about this that much, but like the intern thing, it's very overused, but I still think it's like, indicative of how people think about people who run social media. And so I wanted to be an advocate for social managers. And so like I just today like announced the compensation survey so that people can see what other people make who work in social roles. It's like so all over the place. You ask one person, they make this, and another person, it's like, what is the true sort of like bands of like what a director makes? And so that's like very important to me. And so I think always just advocating for the roles and never talking down to the audience or slamming, you know, what one strategy is. I really don't like criticize. I'll criticize Gary Vee, but I'm not going to criticize like a
punching up
brand. Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to criticize a brand's social media. Like there's some, you know, I've seen social managers who, here's what I would do if I like redid the grid for this brand. I'm like, that makes the social manager for that brand feel like shit. So I'm not going to do that. You know, like I think that there's a level of like, you know, instead of saying like, memes suck, don't use them. It's like, well, here's some tips for creating like super original content that I love. It's like
productive
giving, productive conversations. Yes.
Yeah. No, I like that. That's, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons I'm like drawn to LinkedIn bio and that it like reads as such a quality product. Because like I said, a lot of people aren't thinking about the responsibility to their audience. And I think like when we were just talking about like, what's the definition of a creator, if it's like, you know, people making content for distribution online, like I think there is inherently a responsibility there. And like I talk to journalists sometime, some who are like from a traditional journalistic background, some who are more of like an indie creator background, and I think that's where this line really is, where like the ones from the traditional background have been taught these like ethics and, you know, in codes of conduct, conducting yourself with integrity, whereas like the creator side, like I don't know, lacks that, which I don't know how that's solved, but it's, I don't know, it's something that makes me sad.
I think, yeah. I mean, I definitely think my work, like time at Bon Appetit, working at Condé Nast, like being like the process of like being edited is like a very helpful thing, especially when writing a newsletter. And like, no, there's been discourse about this, but like, you know, no, you don't need to be like an amazing writer to write a newsletter, but like it certainly helps. Like you can't deny that if you have like a very clear writing style, it's going to be better than like somebody who isn't as like clear in their writing, right? Like I don't know.
Well, the discourse you're talking about is Emily Sundberg's Machine of the Garden post, right? Which I think your response to that was one of the most cogent and clear, which I don't know, for anybody listening who doesn't know about this, basically this was like a few weeks ago, by the time this comes out it have been like a month ago. Emily Sundberg, big Substack writer, she made this post. It's tough to talk about it because it's like everybody had so many different takes on it. But basically she was saying like there's the Substack in particular newsletter market saturated. There's so many people who like don't seem to be offering much value. And then your take was, I'll let you say your take.
My take was that, my take is basically like you wouldn't, a platform is different than a social media platform. Mm-hmm. And before Substack introduced Notes and some of these more algorithmic features, it was just like, you know, MailChimp, for example. Mm-hmm. And you would never be like, I can't believe people who send newsletters on MailChimp, like don't know, you know, write listicles. You wouldn't care because they're just using it as a tool. But when you're putting things in an algorithm and you're leveling certain things up and certain things perform better in that algorithm, well, then that's when a machine enters the garden, is when there's an algorithm present. So,
yeah. Okay. So on two recent podcasts you were on, you kind of were asked to give a hot take and you said that people say they want the default chronological Instagram feedback, but that it is back if you want it and nobody uses it because nobody actually wants to use it, which like to me is sort of a defense of the out, like a how I learned to stop worrying and love the bomb defense of the algorithm. So I want to like, is that a defense of the algorithm or is it just to like, you know, dismissal of nostalgia for a different time of social?
I mean, I think it's a defense of a algorithm. It's not like I'm like in love. Like I think like TikTok's algorithm is like amazing. Like, you know, like you don't have to follow any, you don't have to follow anyone. It just like knows because you finished like one video that like now you're interested in like seeing how wasps get killed by gasoline, which is my current situation. But yes, I don't think Instagram's algorithm is perfect, but I think like there's a reason you haven't seen that person's post it's because you have never engaged with them. So like, tell it what you like and it will probably show it to you again. But if you like never like or engage with that person's content, like, yeah, it's probably not going to show it to you again.
That's a good point. I mean, it's like disliking TikTok and what your content is like, just disliking what you look like in the mirror, kind of. Okay, back to the newsletter. So you've got around 65,000 subscribers now. I think you'd said in another interview that when you first announced it back in like 2021, that you like instantly got 8,000 subscribers. How has it just been like kind of organic word of mouth growth, or how has that, how have you gotten to 65,000?
Yeah, I think there's nothing that I can think of that was like, oh my gosh, that's like a crazy like pop. I would say just, which is the worst advice, publishing consistently. But like, I do feel like consistency. And it's the type of resource that I think, like, I see like a lot of referrals from Slack and Teams, which I think is funny. It's like, clearly people are sharing it there. And so it's the type of thing, like, if you work on a social team, which, you know, every company has a social team, like, you're probably going to want to subscribe to it because it's relevant to your interests. And so it's just been like sort of a slow
trade mag, trade rag.
Yeah. For social.
I'll say it.
Sure. But I think that, yeah, it's been just like a really consistent growth. And I'm always like, there can't be more people who work in social that want to subscribe to this. And somehow there are. And also people, I was going to say, like, say to me all the time, I don't work in social, like, but this is so interesting to me because, you know, I work in marketing, or I am so curious how all of this happens, or I work in influencer marketing. Like, there's so many relevant things that would make somebody want to subscribe to it.
Yeah. I think too, like with that, like, I mean, going back to what we were talking about, but like having responsibility to the audience and like caring about creating something quality. Like, I think people hear the, like, you know, publish consistently thing, but like that only works if it's like a quality thing. You're publishing consistently and you're like, you know, caring about the audience. With like the people who don't work in social too, like, I think, I mean, I often talk about Casey Lewis's After School. I've interviewed her on here. I feel like most people who have newsletters know who she is. She does a great job. It's the same thing there, right? Where like most people aren't working in, you know, aren't marketing to Gen Z, and that's kind of like what she writes about, but like, it's just really interesting to like know what's going on, because it's kind of like, yeah, it's kind of like a trade rag situation, but it's like more about like just knowing, being aware of like, that's just news. It's like pop culture news. And that's what you're doing too, really.
And I think I hear from a lot of people like, oh my God, social media like stresses me out. I'm like, so not like, you know, online. And like, I give people a very easy way to just sort of do one scroll and see what's going on, and they don't need to like log spend into every app.
Okay. So the newsletter, I know, like you said, it brings you consulting clients, even though that was never the intention. There's also, you have a job board. I believe that's like part of the business for you. And then you do have a paid subscription model, which is like the extra, like kind of the essay, social media trends part of it. And then the Discord community. You started doing the paid subscription a little over a year ago, right?
Yep.
Why did you, what was like the, because you've been doing it for like 2 years at that point. What was the decision and how did that change your approach to making this?
I think, you know, with consulting, I was ending up working on the newsletter like at the end of the day, at night, on weekends. And I was like, I would love to be able to work on this in the morning when my brain is working best. And I want to like make it something that, you know, is sustainable for me. And so that was really the motivation for it, of just like, you know, I think that I'm spending a lot of time making this and not during work hours. And I'd like to make it like my job. So that was a big piece of it for me.
So, okay. So like, you don't have to say like, you know, exactly how much money you make from this, but would you say it's like, how does it stand up like as a percentage of your business? Like against, like, is it more than any consulting client? Like, is it, you know, 33% of your income, et cetera?
Yeah. I would say it's about, 60% of my income.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I have to imagine you have a lot of premium subscribers.
Maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So again, with Casey, when I was talking to her, She has a lot of premium subscribers, and I was like, I think part of why is it's like it's this one to many consulting, and I think that's what your newsletter is too. And I was thinking about that earlier, like an hour before we got on this call, you sent out the your yearly social media compensation survey that you were just talking about, and like that to me is like the definition of that. Where like for what is it, like $5 a month or $8 a month, you can like, you know, you're paying for like your consulting services, where even if you're just like a, you know, a social media, like early career social media professional, and you want to like figure out how much you should be paid, it's like, this is like, you're paying for like this consulting service about your career. Do you think like that, do you feel like it's this one to many consulting?
I mean, well, first of all, the survey will be free, and so you won't need to pay for the results of it. So that's important. So sometimes it's like, like when you are paying for a subscription, you're also supporting the free interviews, and you're supporting the fact that I hired somebody to help me do this survey. And like, I could not do it myself, because the first time I did it myself, it was like horrible.
Because that was before you even were paying yourself to do this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like, that's great. Now, like, the results will be really helpful, and they'll be able to like be more actionable, I think, than when like I did it before I was getting paid. That's a very clear like sort of benefit. I mean, I think like especially on those like Tuesday newsletters, like the way what I like paywall is very intentional. Like, that is, you know, I'm giving post ideas that like I will see brands the next few days post those post ideas very clearly. And like, that's awesome. And it's very tactical advice that I think like if I was doing a one-on-one with your brand, maybe it would be a lot more tailored, but like some of those ideas could be in there.
You probably use them the week before, you know, give your own clients a lead.
My clients get the early access. Okay. Yeah.
If you really want, you can pay the consulting
they
fee.
They do actually though. And then the interviews are intentionally free because I want who I interviewed to be able to share it with their community. And I want them to not feel like, you know, oh my God, she interviewed me and then she put it behind a paywall, like pay me for that content, you know? So I think that's very intentional, and those interviews do bring in new audiences. And, you know, I think I've like surveyed my readers before, and like they much prefer, I think, the strategic advice because it's, you know, can help them. I've heard from companies that they like sit down and read the newsletter together to like brainstorm post ideas for the week. Like, that's a very helpful feature, but the interviews lead to like discovery and can lead to like, weirdly, like on Twitter, like, you know, I talked about like the New York Public Library using memes. That was like something that was really talked about on Twitter.
That was a really good
of
piece,
how
yeah.
the New York Public Library did that. And so I was able to then post it there, and like that did really well there, 'cause it's almost newsy in a way. Same with like when I interviewed like the Mohawk Chevrolet in woman. If you haven't checked out their account, you should. And so like some of the more newsy pieces like that are interviews do very well on like Twitter, for example.
You also I think we talked a little bit about LinkedIn, but like looking at your LinkedIn feed, you do a much better job of like anyone I can think of like repurposing, you know, your newsletter for LinkedIn. Like, it's not easy to get that. You're consistently getting like a few hundred, and I think you have like, maybe it was more, but maybe like 25,000 followers on LinkedIn. I almost feel like LinkedIn is like more effective for you than Twitter.
It depends. I feel like with LinkedIn, I'm talking to like the same people kind of over and over again, which there's nothing wrong with that. And their algorithm, I do find it to be very like friendly. Like, they'll like, something will go and be shot into some like, you know, fast lane that I'm down with.
The HOV LinkedIn.
That's how I think about the algorithm. Yeah. It's literally like we're in the left lane right now. But on Twitter, I get like, you know, a lot of, and this is helpful for a newsletter business. Like if I have a tweet that goes viral, like I did a tweet about averaging the graduation year of the people who work on Kamala Harris's Kamala Harris's social team
campaign.
And that was from my newsletter. I did that initial like work for my newsletter, but then I turned in a tweet, and then like, you know, the Washington Post reached out wanting to talk to me about Kamala Harris's campaign, just because I saw she did a viral tweet about their campaign. I will use her as a source. And like, I think like when you write a newsletter, having your newsletter in papers of record in like in legacy media is maybe it doesn't do much, but I think it's nice.
Okay. How about what is your proudest moment in the past 3.5 years, or like a highlight when you're like, I'm so glad I did that interview, or like, wow, that was such a smart trend I spotted, and like the Kamala age thing. What's a highlight from the past few years?
I mean, honestly, and I'm not just talking about this because I just sent out the new one, but when people would DM me saying, I used your survey and I just got a raise because mm-hmm. I was able to point to like what other social managers make, or what I get DMs like, oh my gosh, the idea that you had in your newsletter is so good, it just like performed so well for us, like,
yeah,
that's so cool to see, like
to serve my audience
to like be actually genuinely helpful and to like impact something like real that's being put into the world, mm-hmm. whether it's on the internet or it's, you know, into their bank account.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's really cool. I feel like you probably get, I mean, just being in the Discord too, I don't know. Like, I think one thing with a newsletter, like with Creator Spotlight, like I don't get so many replies, right? And I'm like, is this thing on, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel like hearing from people like that is like the most gratifying thing.
Yeah.
So I think you've probably interviewed like, I don't know, hundreds of maybe just dozens, but probably hundreds of people at this point. What are there like any traits in common that you think like good social managers have?
I mean, something that I think about a lot of like when I think about some of the most like innovative social managers is that a lot of them have like comedy backgrounds, which I think is really interesting.
That makes sense.
And so that is always interesting when I'm like, why are you so good at this? And they're like, oh, I like do comedy on the side. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, dang.
Yeah.
And I know, like, I interviewed the woman who runs at Elmo, like, is the voice of Elmo on the internet. And she is doing, like, stand-up classes right now. So it's, like, almost working backwards, too, of, like, it being, like, a really good sort of trait. Part like, of if you're training. Not trained in comedy, then, like, maybe I'll try taking a comedy. And I've always thought, also, like, improv would be a great sort of just like non-technical skill for a social manager to have, but that's something I've noticed.
Yeah, that makes sense. No, I mean, because like one of the main across any, whether it's like, you know, an independent creator or brand, whatever, like coming up with like skits and like regular sketch series,
yeah,
like that's with video at least.
Yeah, and a lot of like agencies, copywriters are comedians as well, which I didn't realize.
Yeah, thinking on your feet, etc. What about like any, I don't know, like outlier traits, like any, like something maybe you don't see a lot, but that like you're like, wow, that person is so good because they have X.
I mean, I think about the like Mohawk Chevrolet where like your company is a great set in just like a dealership, like that's a funny set.
Like, and like, I think that there's model. Like.
Exactly, which it is like basically they take the office. So I think it's like a funny thing when the set of where the TikToks are taking place is just kind of unique, or not just your average like office. I've seen like funny. I mean, I don't necessarily like love his content, but like Dr. Miami is huge.
Well, and something it's like you something know, the that sex you said. Is, oh, sorry. Something you said recently that I feel like is describing this that I really liked was like, or maybe it was somebody you interviewed said this, your ordinary is their extraordinary or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. Somebody I interviewed said that and I was like, wow, that is a really clear like statement and such a inspiring one that like, I don't know. Yeah. You just think about like, there's all these things that you take for granted as working in a certain place. And then it's like, most people have no idea how that works, and they probably like watch a whole video of you explaining it.
Like your shit is weird. Like whatever it is, you have to remember that.
Yeah.
Like I said at the beginning, I think probably your newsletter is every other social media manager's favorite newsletter. I think it's kind of becoming this institution if you choose to, you know, keep doing it. Where would you like for it to be as a newsletter, as a concept, as a community? I don't know. Where is Lincoln Bio in a year? And then also let's say like 3 years. I think 5 is a little too far.
Yeah. I would say in a year, I'd like to just be you know, continuing what I'm doing. I think, like, for me, I would love to, I've done a few meetups, but like, I think there's a lot of opportunity. I don't even want to say it out loud, but I'll say it. I just think there's a lot of opportunity for like a social media conference that like is actually really helpful. And you come away with it not feeling like you're just like bombarded with sponsors, but like you feel like you met like some
other really talented. So.
I know. And I'd still like to be invited back, of course, but and not like, you know, not like a conference in the sense that you would even imagine a conference. And so,
sorry to interrupt for a second, but I think this is exactly what we were talking about earlier with like communities and brands. We're like, any conference is like their business model is like, you know, some tickets, some sponsorships. And so it's like, it becomes like, it's not like, it's like meant to like, you know, bring social media managers or like whatever industry together, but like it only works because, you know, seven brands gave $100,000 each. So like,
and now they're the ones talking on the stage when I'm like, I didn't want to hear from you. You paid your way onto the stage. Exactly. And so like, I'd love a conference that like did not even have sponsors and it was just put on and like, it just felt really intentional and like actually helpful. And you're not hearing from the CMO who's then talking about the social strategy that they didn't even work on. It's coming from the people who are actually in the weeds and doing that work.
Which then that only works if it's like you aren't trying to make a huge profit from it, maybe.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be for that.
Yeah. Would you do it in New York or LA?
I'd do it in New York, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's honestly just easier to like gather people in New York than LA.
Yeah. I mean, you just take the train.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. 5 years, I'm writing a column for the New York Times.
But okay. That's what I was going to say. Would you ever like just do this full time? Would you ever like quit the consulting or you're in it for the love of the game?
I really think the consulting is what makes me.
It feeds it.
Good at writing the newsletter because I'm in it and I feel it. And I think that's, you know, really so important.
Boots on the ground
to it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I will never stop consulting.
You heard it here first.
It here first.
All right, Rachel, where can people find your work?
www.milkcarton.net is my newsletter. Oh yeah. And that's my handle. MILKKARTEN.
Perfect. Thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Listeners, I'll be here next week. See ya.